Good morning. It's time. It's good to be home. I told someone yesterday that, you know, when you move, it takes a little while for a place to feel like home when you've been gone somewhere and you're driving back in. Well, we commented, Janice and I did, that we got that feeling yesterday when we were driving back in. So it felt like and it feels like that we're back home. I've told Robert in the sound booth to help me out this morning. There's something in South Texas in the fall that my throat doesn't like. And yesterday, I almost could not make a sound. So we're going to try to make it through two lessons in a Bible class this morning. So bear with me if the voice doesn't hold up too well. And let me say at the outset in this lesson that Corey's got my backside on this lesson tonight, and there are things that I would like to say and that probably need to be said even for this lesson that Corey's going to cover tonight. So we're kind of tag-teaming today on these lessons, so I want to encourage you to be here tonight and make sure that you get the real story here of what we'll introduce this morning. Your salvation is in many ways an incredibly personal thing. There are an infinite number of decisions that we each make on as we journey through this life. And we all have, whether we recognize it or not, we have little images in our minds about how we view things. And one of the ways that I view each one of us as individuals, human beings, making this journey of life, is kind of like the leaves on a tree. That as we all start out there, we all have certain things in common, regardless of who we are or where we were born or when we lived. And so there, we're all together in that trunk of that tree. But as time passes, that tree branches out, and there are large branches, and so there are some of us, large numbers, that have certain things in common that we no longer have those things in common with others that branch off and go in a different direction, and then you can see as you go on further and further, then the branches become smaller, and we make personal decisions. Some decisions are made for us. We weren't given the option of where we were going to be born or what our ethnicity is going to be or a number of things like that. But at some point, we began to branch off because of choices that we make. And those branches get smaller and smaller and smaller until finally it ends up at the very end that there's just one single leaf at the end of every branch. We all started off, but we are that one leaf at the very end of that trunk that became a large branch, it became smaller branches, it became twigs, et cetera, et cetera. And so we're the sum total of those decisions that we made, particularly in our life. And the Bible is the instruction book from God about how to make right decisions. And there are a number of passages. In fact, I guess we could truly say that all of the Bible, everything in the Bible, is about helping us make right decisions so that we can end up where we want to end up and where the Lord wants us to end up. And there are some passages that have been abused. They've been taken out of context and they've been quoted to the point that some of us don't want to use them anymore because they carry to so many people such a wrong or negative connotation. But one of those passages that's been abused to the point that we don't use it much anymore is Philippians chapter 2, verse 12. And it says, "Therefore, my dear friends, as you've always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling." That's a good verse. It's been abused because it's been used by some to try to prove that we have to work to earn our salvation, but that's not what it says. Pardon me. But it does give us, I'll try not to do that too much, it does give us a warning, an encouragement to be really, really careful about the decisions that we make. Continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. In God's family, it soon becomes apparent that we don't all make the same decisions, doesn't it? And that brings some heartburn. That brings split churches. That brings lots of problems into our lives. Because as we go along, we have certain decisions that we've all made in common, but then as we make more and more and more decisions, it gets to a point that we don't all make identical decisions. And how you feel about that is really important. And how you treat your brother who has chosen to make a different decision than you on certain matters is really important. It's important to God. It's important for the unity of the church. It's important for how the church views the world. When I first came here, I told you that there was one passage of Scripture that I was going to make a commitment to you to try to preach a sermon from at least once a year. And it is because I believe that this context is so very vital and important to maintain harmony within a congregation. And so today is your second installment on this particular context, and so I'd like for you to be turning to Romans chapter 14. Romans chapter 14. And from Romans chapter 14 this morning, we're going to see some reasons why we should want to get along with each other. This chapter also tells us about how to get along, but we'll today not focus on the how. We focused on that on the lesson about a year ago, in fact, about 14 months ago. And we'll probably do so again, but rather than the how, I want to talk about the why. And while the why is in some ways not as complex as the how, it is nonetheless every bit as vital. In fact, in some ways it's more vital. Because the truth is, until you understand the why, you'll never take the difficult steps that are required to accomplish the how. Because you won't want to. And if you don't really want to, you're not going to do what he says in Romans chapter 14. You're going to find 1,000 reasons not to do it. And so it's really important that we understand why I should want to get along. And there was a time in my life when I truly felt like, I'm sorry to say, that if you didn't agree with me, then we couldn't even be friends. It was younger in my life, but there was a period of time, pretty long period of time, that I felt a tremendous pressure in my life to win. I had to win. And I had to win all the time. And so that meant that I was pretty argumentative, and that meant that I argued a lot with people that I disagreed with. And at least a part of me on occasion would want to, if I felt strongly enough about what we were disagreeing about, if we couldn't agree on it, then I really would have liked to invited them to go outside and let's settle this thing in a more manly way here. But I can tell you that life has a way of helping us get over some of those things because, first of all, it occurs to me that I really can't remember any disagreements that were ever really settled that way. I mean, there was one person that walked away. Maybe there was one person that walked away feeling satisfied. Maybe there wasn't. It's kind of like the debates that I attended as a boy. I never saw anybody or talked to anybody who lost one. Everybody had walked away a winner. And not very much was ever accomplished that I could tell. That was very positive. And besides that, age has a way of introducing you to some realities that you may have ignored before that time, and you don't invite people outside anymore like you used to because it may not end up like you think it's going to. And that's a little piece of advice to people who talk about, you know, they have a sense of pride that I've got a hot temper. Well, there are some people and some things out there that can help you with that problem. And so just be real careful because somebody might introduce you to a solution to your problem that you weren't looking for. So I want us to look at this chapter kind of holistically as a whole. Verse 1, provides by implication the problem and the solution. I'm in Romans chapter 14, verse 1. And let me paraphrase it for you. And I will say, paraphrase it in a more accurate way by literally translating a couple of the words in here that might help us appreciate the intensity of what he's saying. He says in Romans 14, 1, warmly receive him whose faith is weak without condemning his opinions. Look at your version again and listen to me. Warmly receive him whose faith is weak without condemning his opinions. And the first word that I translated or transliterated some for you was receive. And it means literally to receive to yourself, to reach out and grab and pull him to you. Warmly receive that person. It doesn't just mean tolerate him. It means to receive him warmly. And then the latter part of it, him whose faith is weak, without condemning the matters of logic. Logizomai is the Greek word, if that means anything or matters to you. We get the word logic. Things that take logic to reason to a conclusion. And so he says, warmly receive him whose faith is weak without condemning the things that he has reasoned to. Now, that one verse is the sum total of this entire section of Scripture right here. That is the charge, and that is the answer. Everything else is enlightening you about how and why you should do that. But that's the lesson right there. And that's what God tells you to do. Warmly receive your brother that you don't agree with him on certain issues. And in order to fulfill this charge, there are two things that must be addressed. The why and the how. Why should I feel any real compulsion to warmly receive somebody that I don't even like in the first place because he disagrees with me over something that I feel pretty strongly about? Why should it matter to me? Let him go his way and I'll go my way. It's a lot easier way to deal with it, isn't it? And then it's the how. In case I did want to reconcile with that brother, in case I did want to be able to not only coexist, but I wanted to try to warmly receive him and bring him to myself, how would I go about doing that? And this chapter answers both of those. And that's why I think it's so incredibly important that we keep talking about Romans chapter 14. And so here's a general outline of this chapter or this section for you. Verses 2 through 12. I would think this, but I think this is pretty neat. And so I'd recommend you might want to write this down and do some study about this little two-point idea here. Verses 2 through 12 addresses your attitude toward your brother. Now you read verse 2 through 12 and see if that's not the case. It addresses your attitude toward your brother. And then verses 13 through 23 addresses your attitude toward the issue at hand. What it is you're doing or whatever it is that somebody else is doing that you don't like that they're doing. And so verses 2 through 12 addresses your attitude toward the brother. Verses 13 through 23 addresses your attitude toward whatever it is that you're in disagreement about. Now, go back to verses 2 through 12, your attitude toward your brother, to enable you to specifically identify as you begin to try to warmly receive this brother and try to have a brotherly relationship with them, in order to help you get over the obstacles that you're going to have to do to accomplish that, he gives you a valuable insight into the tendency of how you're going to feel toward that brother as you are involved in that process of trying to have that brotherly feeling and relationship with him. As you try to, if I can use the word reconcile, as you try to reconcile the differences that you have, there is a hill you're going to have to climb. And if you know what it is before you get there, it's a lot less of a hill. And the hill is, the thing that you're going to have to deal with is that there are certain feelings that just come to you just that quickly when you begin to address that with that brother. And there, it's given twice here in this context, verse 3 and in verse 10. And on our position on any given matter, and we could state it this way, am I for it or am I against it? Whatever your position is, and you're going to be on one of the two sides of that, our position determines what our natural attitude is toward our brother who's on the other side of this deal. We have a feeling, a really strong feeling that we're going to have to overcome in order to warmly receive that brother. And he tells us what it is. The strong brother, and he defines a strong brother, is someone whose conscience will allow him to do something that others' conscience won't allow them to do. The strong brother, as he is made aware that there's a brother who disapproves of what he's doing, his natural immediate inclination is to say, who cares what you think? Right? It's not just that way in the church. It's that way about everything in life. Whenever somebody disagrees with you about something that you're doing, and you feel like you have the right to do that, and he feels like you don't have the right, then your immediate thing is, and to make the context and give you exactly what he says, don't make your brother out to be nobody. Don't make him out to be nobody, as if he doesn't matter, and as if what he thinks doesn't matter. Now, don't tell me that you don't deal with that whenever somebody comes to you or you're made aware that you're doing something that some brother disapproves of. Your immediate reaction just that quickly is, I don't care what he thinks. Who does he think he is anyway? Why should it matter to me what he thinks? You can go fly a kite. You can go jump off a cliff. I don't care. It's my business what I do. That's what you're going to have to deal with in order to warmly receive that brother. And if you go with your gut feeling, and if you go with how you naturally feel, you're not going to warmly receive him. And God's not going to be glorified. And you're not going to be acting out of love. You know, there's just not much about Christianity that comes natural to us, is it? The natural man is not in man that walks to direct his own steps. And you learn more and more and more how true that is. And then on the other side, flip this coin over, the weak brother who's looking at this, his conscience won't allow him to do this, and he's looking at this brother whose conscience will allow him to do it, and he has an immediate reaction. He says, you're going to hell. He condemns him. Diacrino, to judge down, to condemn. And don't tell me you don't do that too. You see somebody who's doing something, and you think is wrong, and you immediately, you don't entertain going to him and sitting down and talking to him. You just say, hey, he's wrong, and if he keeps doing that, he's going to go to hell. You condemn him. And so if my conscience allows me to approve of something, I tend to make out to be nobody those who oppose me. And if my conscience forbids me to participate in something, I tend to automatically condemn those who do oppose me on the other side. And verses 13 through 23 addresses your attitude toward the action itself, whether you can do it or whether your conscience won't allow you to do it. But for this lesson, I want us to develop an attitude toward our brother that will motivate us to put into practice a principle that will result in enabling us to warmly receive them. Not the how, but the why. And there are a number of things here that he gives in this chapter. Verse 1, here's a command about how to treat somebody with whom you disagree. Receive him warmly to yourself without condemning him in the matter over which you disagree. Here's my punchline up to this point in this lesson. My willingness to do that, to receive that person that I disagree with warmly, my willingness to do that depends on the value that I place on you. Now let that soak in a minute. It's really easy for me to just discount you and say, he doesn't matter, and his opinion doesn't matter, and I don't care. But when you do matter, and when your opinion does matter, for whatever reason, either for my benefit or your benefit, whenever it does matter properly, then I'm going to start taking the steps to do what Paul tells me to do and the Holy Spirit tells me to do to enable me to receive you warmly as a brother. But if I don't place value on you, I'm not going to do what it says. And so it's really important that we talk about the why. Why should I not go with my gut feeling? Why should I be concerned about accepting warmly all of my brothers and sisters? There's some of us that we can each accept pretty easily because we like one another. But there are others of us that we don't particularly like one another. We've made decisions that's branched us out this way and somebody else went out this way. And they're a leaf on the tree on this side and I'm a leaf on the tree on this side. And we don't have nearly as much in common. And so why should I care about what that leaf over there thinks about me because I'm over here? Well, I want to try to tell you why from this context here. And in this context, the Lord is going to give us, actually, He's probably going to give us 7. I put it down to 6, and because I knew I was going to be out of time, which I already am, I cut it back 1 more. But some reasons to motivate you to put every effort into getting along with every other brother and sister. Reason number 1 is in verse 3, and I'm just going to give them to you, and you write them down. I don't have time to really illustrate them. It's in verse 3. Reason number 1 that you should warmly receive every other brother and sister in the kingdom is because God has accepted him. And who do I think I am? And by the way, it's the same word there in verse 3 that he used in verse 1, because God has accepted him. God has received him warmly to himself. So who do you think you are and who do I think I am that I would reject somebody that God's accepted? Now, we need to think about that. You see, our problem is that we immediately say, well, he's probably not a Christian anyway. You better watch yourself. You better watch what you say. Because God has received him to himself. And if he's in fellowship with God and you're not in fellowship with him, guess who's out of fellowship with God? That would be you. And your arrogance and your anger and your pride and your whatever it is that led you to not receive that brother puts you on the outside. Are you going to set yourself up as a standard above God? Are you going to require something that God doesn't require of a brother? God's warmly received him to himself. Number 2 is in verses 4, the first part of verse 4, and in verse 10 through 13. Because, and this is going to come as quite a shock to some of us, because everybody does not have to answer to you. You are not the judge. Now, that's going to come as a shock to some of us, and some of us don't believe that. Because I know a pretty good number of folks who believe that everybody in the world's got to jump through my hoops. You've got to do what I say you've got to do, and you got to fall in step with me, or you're not going to make it. Because I'm going to make sure you don't make it. Everybody does not even have to agree with you. Now, well, that's kind of foreign to our thinking, isn't it? You may not have all the right answers. Has that ever occurred to you? Verse 13, he says, so stop passing judgment on one another. Stop condemning one another. That doesn't mean, and I have to put this little, and Corey will touch some of this, that doesn't mean that you have to approve of everything that everyone does. Guess what? Everybody doesn't approve of everything you do. Does that make you wrong? Well, when we put the shoe on the other foot, you know, I like it on one foot, but not on the other foot, don't you? Listen to how we're to treat a brother that is involved in sin, something that is serious in his life. Galatians 6, 1 through 3. Brothers, if a man is trapped in some sin, you who are spiritual should restore him gently. That's the same word that is used to how you set a broken bone. I like word pictures. And that word, restore him gently, is the same, it draws a word picture of somebody who is setting a broken bone. Now you think about how you would do that if it's somebody you love and their leg is broken and you're trying to set it. You're going to be as gentle as you can possibly be. You're going to put some firmness, but you're going to be really, really gentle, aren't you? And so he says, restore him gently. Continues, carry each other's burden. And in this way, you'll fulfill the law of Christ. And then he adds something really strange. He says, if anyone thinks he is something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. Why do you think he puts that in there? Right in the middle of all of this about restoring somebody's dignity. If anybody thinks he's something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. Because if you don't do it that way, you think everybody has to answer to you. You think you're something. And you're deceiving yourself. Pretty interesting, isn't it? And then reason number three, in verse back in Romans 14, verse 4, the latter part of it, because God causes that brother to stand. It says, to his own master he stands or falls. And the implication, again, is what? That ain't you. You're not the master here. You're a servant too. You are a fellow servant with this person you're disagreeing with. It says, to his own master he stands or falls. And he will stand. You read that with me? And he will stand. For the Lord is able to make him stand. And we can say, amen. So when you're pushing on this brother that you disagree with, that God has warmly received to himself, guess who you're pushing on? Guess who it is that's standing behind him holding him up? You better be careful who you pick on. And you might think you're winning when in fact you're not. And you might think you want to call him outside and settle this like a man when you don't. Because guess who's going to step outside with him? And guess who it is that's taking up his cause? And guess who it is that's fighting for him? Guess who it is that whenever you attacked him, that's causing him to stand up and stay up? In the same context, Romans chapter 15, verse 3 says, the insults of those who insult you have fallen on me. That's Jesus saying that. When somebody insults you, he insults me. And if that person who's insulting you happens to be a brother, that makes it all that much worse, doesn't it? And then reason number 4, verse 6 through 9, because we're all trying to please the Lord. And right here, I think, is something that we really need to do some thinking about. Because what this addresses is impugning your brother's heart. We're all trying to please the Lord. You'll notice through this context, he says, we do it unto the Lord, unto the Lord, unto the Lord. And that makes all the difference. We're automatically assumed that anybody who opposes us, who thinks differently than we do, that their motives are not sincere and they're not pure. We automatically assume that. But we don't have the right to automatically assume that. Just because they made a different decision than we do, and just because they don't think just like we do on certain things doesn't automatically mean that their heart is impure or their motives are. You don't have the right to impugn their motives. In verse chapter 15, verse 3, hang on for that just a minute. If you're going to make a mistake, I want to make this statement first. If you're going to make a mistake about a brother or sister and you're going to fall on one side or the other and you're going to make an error, then let's err on the side of love and mercy. That'd be a good thing to do. Because the judgment that you use to judge somebody else, guess what God's going to pull out and whip on you? That judgment that you were so harsh on your brother or sister. And then one last one, reason number 5, verse 13 through 21, God holds us accountable for how our actions will affect our brothers. You can't say anything you want to say and assume that there's not going to be repercussions. You can't just do anything that you feel like doing and assume that there's not going to be some serious repercussions in your life. I mean, sometimes we just pop our mouth off and then walk off and we told them, didn't we? And we assume that we did a good job and that's the end of the matter. It's not the end of the matter. God's going to hold you accountable for what you say and what you do and the effect that it has on your brother. Even a brother you don't care for that much. Now, folks, that's pretty serious stuff. Why should I even care what you think? Because God wants me to care. Because that brother and that sister, they're as valuable as you are to God. He died for them just like he died for you. And he's holding them up. And he's received them warmly. And we're all trying to please God. And God is going to hold us accountable. He says, hey, here's the attitude I want you to have. Rather than thinking, I don't care what that person thinks, here's the attitude I want you to have. Verse 13 of our context. Make up your mind not to put a stumbling block or an obstacle in your brother's way. Make your mind up. That's where you're going to live. And Paul will say in this context, if eating meat causes my brother to stumble, I've had my last steak. Won't be no more meat for me. That's how much value he placed on those people who were on the other side of the issue with him. He cared that much about them. And brothers and sisters, when we start caring that much about one another, a lot of this little junk is going to dissolve and go away. And we're going to do what God tells us to do. We're going to warmly receive one another without judging each other on these matters of logic and opinion. And God calls on us to do that. It's not natural. But if you do what comes natural, you're going to do wrong. And do you realize that because of what you say or what you do, that it's very possible that somebody could go to hell? And that somebody could be you. While we stand and sing.